This recording will be for the regular meeting of the Emory County School District Board of Education, held on November 7th, 2007, starting at 7 p.m. at Emory High School.
I think we're ready to start. We're all right there. We just started. We're glad to be at Emory High and appreciate you letting us come here, and appreciate those that have come today. We will begin today with the Pledge of Allegiance, and the flag is on this side, so we're just all going to shift the best we can over to here.
JJ can probably reach it and hold it. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we will begin with the consent items, the warrants and the minutes and the financial reports for October. Are there any questions that haven't been resolved or you'd like to ask them at this point?
I move that we accept them as they were presented.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have a request for a donation of property, the Children's Justice Center.
We'll introduce Shelley. Right? Shelly Wright, right? Maybe while she's getting ready, we had a meeting. A couple of you were able to attend with us with the Children's Justice Center a couple of weeks ago concerning the request for the school district to look at some property for a new Children's Justice Center in Emory County. And also for our building construction program to look at constructing that. And I think they're in the process of looking at funding for that. I thought it was a really good meeting. And we were looking at the property on Center Street there across from, right across here from the high school that we have, which is property that's really too small to put a good sized home that we're used to building. But would be ideal, I think, for a Children's Justice Center. And so just with that introduction, we'll let Shelley explain to you from there what they're looking at.
Thank you.
Right. We're right up here.
The Children's Justice Center in Emory County has been around for about 6 years. And a year and a half ago, the center that we were in, we lost. The owners that we had leased from for quite a while decided to sell the house, and so the new owners moved in, and we had to be kicked out, I guess. We have 30 days to get out. So June of 06 was a year that we've been out, so a year and a half now. So since then, we have been working with the Emory County Commissioners on trying to establish a new home for our center. And with that obviously comes the land. But to kind of give you a little bit of an idea of what the Children's Justice Center is about, have you guys heard about, know what the Children's Justice Center is about? Some of you guys, okay.
When we were there the other day to the meeting, it was very informative. We appreciated hearing it.
Great. And for those of you who were not there, and for you guys here in the audience, the Children's Justice Center are a place for children to come and talk about a situation to where they were possibly maybe abused, either sexually, physically, or neglected in any way. Years ago, children were brought into law enforcement offices, they were brought into social workers' offices, sat behind the desk and had to tell some of the most really crucial and embarrassing things that happened to them. So 20-some-odd years ago, the state of Utah adopted the program, the Children's Justice Center program, out of the state of Alabama. And the other states, they're called Children Advocacy Center. They're on the feature of that thing as well. But they all do and represent the same function. And so now, children are brought into the center with their families, and they are interviewed by law enforcement and child protection services. The centers are very child-friendly. They're they don't take either side, whether it's the prosecution side or the defense side. It's a very neutral setting, and it's where children feel like they can talk about the truth. We have a center established in Carbon County, and that's where all of the actual offices take place. The Emory County Center would be considered a satellite center. We are only in that center when an interview is taking place. The old center, I brought a picture of the old center, and to kind of help you, you have to visualize what this looked like. It was one of the cutest centers. Even the Attorney General's office has always loved this center, so they were very sad. So I know you guys are there, but I'm going to just bring that up, show that up to you guys. This center had one interview room, and this is the interview room. The rooms the interviews are always audio tape and video tape. And so we have conference rooms. We had a kitchen because we prepared meals during meetings for those sorts of things.
Do all of you know where that home was located in Castledale? It was on just before you head down Ghost Road out of Castledale. There was a yellow brick, old yellow brick home right there on the left as you're heading out of Castledale down the Ghost Road. I can't remember if it was an old Cecil home or close to it. It was right there, and they had remodeled it. I was there for the open house and dedication.
And so basically, we have been operating out of the UCSF office. And it's actually been harder to do interviews that way because it's not an intro set. It kind of comes across as one-sided, the prosecution side. And so, this is a good chance to look at that. Okay. So, and it actually kind of, try to do the interview over there, but you can just tell the difference in the actual child's disclosure. It's not the same as it is when it's at the Children's Justice Center. And so, at this point, the center depends on community donations to help pay for state costs. The funding for these centers comes through the legislature, but it's only to fund the program. The salaries, the benefits, utilities, programming, equipment, those kinds of things. But these programs do not fund state costs. They haven't, and they never will. That's just part of the agreement through the legislature. They won't fund the state costs. They want a great program, but they don't want to fund the housing for it. Most of your Children's Justice Centers, the actual building and the land, most of them have been donated. There's only very, very few centers in Utah that actually still pay rent, have a lease agreement, whatnot. And so what we're trying to do is go with the support of the Emory County Commission and approach the CID for funding, to fund this project. But we need land, obviously, and any additional community support to help get this project up and running again so the children don't have to go to the DCFS office to be interviewed, and so they don't have to come up to Carbon County.
The justice centers are located in residential areas, correct?
Yes.
So they're not in business sections. It's in the intent that they'd be a home environment,
yes,
in a residential area that's non-threatening.
all of your children's justice centers sit in residential, and they all have the residential look to it. They have the house, you know, some of them have really specific things. They just look like a home, and when you go into them, they're home-like. You don't see a bunch of office stuff going on. There's a front room, you know, the interview rooms, you'll have furniture in. You'll have beds, but you'll have furniture. Again, they're always audio tapes and video tapes for criminal evidence. And the idea behind these children's justice centers is the less time a child has to tell their story, the better. The more time they have to tell their story, the more traumatizing it is, and the weaker the case gets. For prosecution, if they can get one good disclosure on audio tape and video tape, then that's all they need. But if a child has to go to the school, they have to go home, they have to go to the law enforcement office, they have to go to child protective services, they tell their story 5 or 6 times, and it's now, it's not as clean as if they just come to the center, get their interview over with one time, and then the case can move on for possible prosecution if indeed the situation has happened.
How big is the piece of property we're looking at?
It's 0.19 acres, and we, at the meeting, Ed was there, and we did look at whether or not a house could really fit on it with setbacks and all of that, and the house that they need is pretty small, actually. How many square feet were we looking at?
I don't know.
1,200?
I'm not sure.
Okay, it's a small house, and it would fit. We looked at kind of a preliminary house plan and how it would work, and it would fit on the lot. Our involvement would all, if we were to donate the land, we would also be looking at having our student housing program build the house. That wouldn't involve any cost out of our pocket, but it would be an additional house building experience for the students. It would potentially be this summer, as talked about, maybe doing the summer program. Or possibly next year if it takes that long to get everything going.
Just wait for the funding to come through before it's built then?
Yeah.
I told him to see for kind of the commissioner's office. I spoke with him yesterday. He said he was going to come today. He might be in the hospital looking for I've never met him, so I apologize for just go around and kissing everybody. Hopefully you're the commissioner one.
Well, and as we looked at it, and maybe Marie and Sam could add to this, but as we looked at it, it gives us an opportunity for an additional building project, which we're actually getting to where we're winding to where we don't have the lots and the property, on a lot that we really has no other really good purpose as far as building. You know, we can't build one of our usual homes on that lot.
No.
And I think it would be a good use of that property and another building experience for our kids there.
And it would be funded, the building, the materials itself would be funded through CID. Okay. What about if, no longer, funding goes with the state and there's no longer funding for children's justice centers? Would it go back to the school district?
It shouldn't go back to the school district because the county would actually own it. I spoke with Commissioner Fisher about this, and I'm actually currently in the process. I've already received funding from the CID for the Carbon County Center. The Carbon County Center has to be built as well. Basically, it is a gamble with the Emory County Commission, Emory County and Carbon County. It shouldn't go back to the school district. Because you guys aren't, what you're doing is you're donating the land, so the land would no longer be under you guys. You'd have a program building it, obviously, and you'd be paid for the services or the materials.
Okay. It's going to be so far out. So who would we be donating the land to? The state of Utah or is it Emory County?
I don't know. It's the county.
Emory County.
Because Emory County would actually own the building. And for the lifetime of the program, we would continue to lease it from the county.
From the county.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
So if the county were to take it back, what would they do with it? I think we need that. We have some interest in that because of the location. I would question that.
The question was, if the Children's Justice Center were to move by the state or to take that program away, what would happen to the building? Would it be on the shoulders of the school district, or would it be on the shoulders of the...
I'm not sure we're worried about whose shoulders it on as much as usability of the property
right.
and
oh,
home
okay,
its own.
Okay.
Right.
Whether or not the school district would have some interest in that as far as the building itself and the property as far as possibly future use by the school district.
That's my concern. I think that would be something we need to look into.
I think if they did lose their funding and the program, as a commission, I'd like to try and find an avenue to keep that going because it is an important program.
Right.
If that was not feasible, then it would be up to the commissioners and the school board to make a determination as to whether the school wants to donate property back if they wanted to release it to the county for the use.
And I think that's what we need to kind of have an agreement because I think we need to have a little bit of control or a little bit of input in how it's used in the future rather than to just relinquish all control to the county and or whoever and then have it sitting there where, you know, close
well,
to the
yeah, even if there could be some letter of agreement that
right.
if the funding was lost that the county commission and the school board then would negotiate.
Yeah.
The future use of that property and building,
that would be
because it could. I hope it's never lost because it's a great program. But the reality is, possibly in the future, it could be used for an adult education center
mm-hmm.
or some other use.
One of the other things that I think we need to look at, and the reason that we're here, we haven't approached. I don't think you've approached, and I haven't approached Castro City on the size of the lot. Whether it was former that allowed to even put that kind of a facility there. What we were looking for was some kind of a commitment from the school board before we went to the steps of trying to broker a deal with the city.
Mm-hmm.
So we could broker that deal if we don't have any lessons from this board. Well, mm-hmm. And then I'd make sure it's fine.
So tonight you need a motion for us to do that?
84 by 100, it might be 1 foot off.
Just need to tell you that we're willing to work through whatever. I think we're all feel like it's a very worthwhile project.
May I make the motion that we're all in agreement?
With the qualification that we talked about.
Okay.
I'll second that.
I think the motion is to support the concept of pursuing that exchange of property and an agreement with the county on future use of that property and facility should that funding be lost for the Children's Justice Center.
Okay. All right. Okay. The motion's been made.
Second by
Sam.
Okay. Did you get that? Mm-hmm. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation. Good luck.
More steps. Just as a question, about how many people, how many youth do we have use the Emory Justice Center a year, or it would vary.
We
but
have a, I would just, I would actually go to the other year, and that doesn't include us, not necessarily 100 children. I mean, I can have one who's got 2 children, or got 5 children. Not every single one of them is done at the Children's Justice Center. A lot of them are done at the school.
From Emory County?
And that's in Emory County alone?
That's Emory County alone. That is Emory.
I have that from our last quarter from July to September. And we actually did 27 interviews and we had 17 open cases. And that was just the interviews that went to John. Incorporated with the school because of the situation with our new that we've got that sort of classroom.
Wow.
So, I mean, if we had a home, it would probably be, it would be,
kind of
action
onto
that.
Oh.
Is what we're
moving.
Thank you for that.
Wow, that's
okay.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good work.
Okay, we have a letter of agreement from the Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah. I guess, first of all, I want to know if you have any questions. JJ has been working with John Healy, who was working on this summer of 2008 Order of the Arrow service project that will be housed at Canning View Junior High. I guess quite a project. So he's been working with them on the letter of agreement. This is the final version that we've come up with so far. It would include the use of the facilities that's listed on the front of it, along with the use of school buses. We have indicated in the agreement that they would reimburse us $3.25 a mile.
Wow. It might be
$325. Yeah, it might be by the time summer comes. I'm waiting for them now. And also in one of your previous meetings, you approved a $500 charge for utilities. Now, one thing that did happen between the original agreement and this one is it actually went from 7 days to 14 days. Mm-hmm. We did make contact with them because if we were going to have scouts on site using those facilities, then we probably need to look at increasing that amount. But the days... it's still the 7 days that the scouts will be there, and the days prior to that are for setup, getting the key staff there, the base camp set up, the kitchen staff there, the outdoor shower set up, and all of that, and then the days after are for cleaning it all up and tearing it down. So the scouts are still there on the same days.
One of those days is the final walkthrough.
Yeah, it's been there. Okay.
More the better.
Like there's an indemnification clause in there for both?
There is.
That's good.
This has been with copies from one I think in Idaho, I remember. I worked together with our study in there with their law department or someone who did recall that.
Okay.
They changed it every day.
Okay.
Well, I'm recommending that we approve it, but if you have questions, JJ would be happy to answer.
Thank you.
What are you going to do for outside water?
I think they're asking us, if they could tap into some of our systems. They're really not doing a lot of outside over the showering part. They've asked to use our showers inside of our. I think most showers come from inside of the
I was wondering if there'd be a problem with parking.
Kids are not bringing any vehicles, I don't believe.
But the Boy Scouts themselves, you think there'll be enough parking there?
I think there'll be plenty of
parking.
They
talk to Huntington City. Otherwise, they need to talk with the city.
They have talked to Huntington City. They talked to the county sheriff's department for security. They've done a lot of through them.
Okay.
There's
a lot of area over in the cemetery right across the street, but they need to talk with Huntington City.
They're over by the rodeo ground.
National organization, that's basically what they do is they go around and do five or six of these a year in different locations around the United States.
Yeah.
And they come in and they know exactly what they're doing.
They thought of it.
And they tell basically the local leaders to get out of the way and they handle it.
John gave me a date of when they would like to come up and do another walk through with us. Probably on even on the Saturday, Friday evening, Saturday, walk through the
I do too.
Yeah.
So I'd like to recommend the board approve that letter of agreement.
Approve the agreement.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have policy actions, some revisions, and
I can't really remember how this came up, but we were reviewing policy for some reason and found that we had two policies, one which really was not in tune with the other policy. Utah orderly dismissal policy, employee orderly dismissal policy comes from the Utah Code, which is the orderly dismissal law of the state of Utah. And I think initially, years ago, we thought that that only applied to licensed professional employees. But in reality, it applies to all employees. And so we had another policy that was for support staff, probation, suspension, dismissal, that really did not mesh with the orderly dismissal policy. Also, our orderly dismissal policy did not, it was a little bit vague, not vague, but didn't delineate between termination and non-renewal very clearly. So what I tried to do is to, there's no change in the meat of the policy, no change in the policy itself, it's just a separation of non-renewal and termination. They still say the same things, but they're in separate categories, so that it's clear. And it also separates again, non-renewal from termination during a contract. Non-renewal at the end of a contract, or termination during a contract. Other than that, there's no change. It's just to clarify it. Except it requires you to rescind policy GDP, which is the support staff, probation, suspension, and dismissal. And the orderly termination covers that. So my recommendation is that we revise policies GCQ, GDQ, it's same policy, two different codes, and then rescind policy GDP.
Tim, have you had a chance to look over this with you?
We discussed it in our meeting that we had that we didn't let you know about.
Oh, good. That's right.
You were involved with your father.
Yeah, that was that week.
So we discussed the fact, we looked at them to say one conflict and the one that needed to be separated on that.
Okay.
So there's no change in what we talked about.
I'm looking at the revised one on page one. It makes a reference to insubordination, and I don't know how to spell that, all right. Conviction of a job-related felony. If the individual is accused and convicted of a felony, he would fall within this as long as it's job-related. But if it's not job-related, then he is not, right?
According to Utah statute, employment statute, at least with education, as far as, and we studied that and read that some time ago, that you cannot deny employment unless if a person has been charged with a felony and has not been taken care of, then you don't have to employ them. But if they have been convicted of a felony and served their time and it's all cleared up, if that felony does not relate to the job, you can't deny them employment. In other words, if it did not involve drugs, alcohol, physical abuse, violence, child molestation. I'm trying to think of an example that it might include. Somebody help me.
Car
theft. Tax evasion, unless it's you're hiring a business administrator.
Well, that's true.
You own a car or something like that. Yeah.
There's very few.
Really,
there's very few felonies that are not job related in this business, simply because of the nature of the business. But you do have to look at it. And if you can determine it's not job related or would not impede them from doing their job or the position itself, particularly that of an educator, you can't deny them employment. So it has to be job related according to law.
Well, I'm not planning to do anything, but I know somebody that has.
So are we ready for a motion on those?
Well, I would make a motion we approve it as Superintendent Sitter has explained it to us. I can't restate what he said, but
all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. We have a letter of request for unpaid leave.
We got another one. Do we have another one?
I think we have the revision and the
both,
rescinding
of the GDP. Send it to one and revise the other in the same motion. Oh, did we already do this in the system? Want to put it in our book now?
Yeah.
I may have sent you two copies of the same policy because it's in two different places in the policy manual. I don't know. Okay. DCQ and DDQ. Was there another policy that I
think you're right. No, you're good. And we have a letter of request for unpaid leave, I think that's...
Yes, Tiffany Conover, teaching first grade teacher at Farron Elementary School, is expecting a baby. And she does not fall under the family leave policy because she has not been employed with the school district for at least 1 year, and she was she was employed last year, but it was less than the 1,250 hours that's required by law. So she has to request from the board leave without pay. And she's requesting 20 days of leave without pay between December 5th and January 11th. In case you're questioning that, she does schedule and have the baby C-section, so...
Tiffany is my neighbor, and
when it's going to be born.
She came over and talked to me and would like to have been here tonight, but it's parent-teacher conferences at Farron Elementary. And so I would make a motion that we give her the 20 unpaid days as she has requested.
I'll second
that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have a property change proposal.
Oh, that's good. Jillian on this. We met with Roger Pay. This is the property over by our building lot. And we'll let Jared go through that with you.
We've met with Roger a couple of times, actually, and the purpose is that he owns the property that's between the subdivision we've been building our houses in and where the swimming pool is going in. And he's developing a subdivision there in that piece of land, and where his land comes up against our land, there's some jagged angles and just some weird pieces of property. So we've been working together to try to get those straightened out and to basically make up some sort of a land exchange that would be beneficial to both parties. And I included in your packet some information on that. If you have it in front of you, it would be the long piece of paper, if that helps.
The legal side.
He actually colored in.
Yeah, I just passed. On the second legal side paper, it's colored in brown and yellow.
The dotted lines are the current pieces of property, and we own all of those that are in the dotted lines. And those are basically the last lots that we have to build houses on. And I think only two and possibly three of them are buildable because of the size of the lot or fiber optic lines, different types of things that are coming down through the lot. So what he's proposed is to give us the land that's in brown on this paper, and we would exchange the land that's in yellow to him. As you can tell, that gives us a lot more land than we give up. He has agreed to do that for the fact that piece of land that has the yellow in it has an improved street on it, sidewalk, curb and gutter, and because of those improvements are in, he says it's kind of a wash. He'd be willing to do that. The benefit of this is that it would give us more buildable lots to use for our program.
So increase from what to what?
Well, I would say two point.
Okay.
To five.
Okay.
Two, possibly three to five.
Okay.
There are a couple of, I guess, things that we're not sure about yet that could come up in the future. One of them is that there is a fiber optic line that basically goes right down at the back dotted line where it zigzags a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what happens with that fiber line, Roger said he's going to try to get it moved because it was put in without consulting with him or with the school district on our land. But I think that there are restrictions as far as building a certain distance from a fiber line. So that's one consideration. If that's the case, then it may not actually increase our buildable lot. But he claims that he can get them to move it if he wants because of the way it was put in.
We're still trying to figure out when that was put in. And because it had to have been in the last 5 or 6 years, and we've owned the property. We don't have a clue when that fiber was put in there. Because we were not notified of it, and he claims that he was not notified, and so he's working on trying to get that fiber optic line moved. Because it will affect his property. But he actually is wanting to give us 13,000 square feet, and he gets 5,000. Well, we'll trade him 5,000 square feet and pick up 13,000 square feet. We pick up 8,000 overall for the school district. It's on the front page. It's written in the fourth and fifth paragraph down.
Yeah. The other, I guess, concern that we have, he emailed me or faxed me these today, and he has told us up front that he has some protective covenants or CC&Rs that he'll be implementing on the subdivision. And this is a preliminary list of what those will be. I talked to Jim Kill, our teacher for the housing program, and he said with all of these it shouldn't be a big deal except for the roof design. And we currently build our houses with a 412 pitch, and as you can see, a single story would be able to have no less than an 812. His concern there was, of course, with safety, with the kids up there building a roof that's that steep. I called Roger and kind of voiced that concern. He said the reason he is looking at that is to make the houses more attractive, look a little bit bigger, that type of thing. We didn't really talk about negotiating that down, but it is a concern, and in my opinion, probably needs to be looked at before we finalize anything. But yeah, the rest of these we're either already doing. One of them is putting stone or brick on the three facing sides of the house. That would be something we'd have to subcontract out, but it would raise the cost of the house a little bit, but wouldn't affect the timeline of the project. We could still get it done.
So
you're still working things out, so we're not. Are we looking for a?
He was going to try to be here tonight and didn't make it.
Okay.
At this point, it's a good project for us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any problem with the land exchange. We certainly aren't losing anything,
right. And
we potentially gain a lot. The only real concern I have is one is the roof design, and the other one would be potentially we can buy some lots from him in the future that he's developing, but I don't think we really have a proposal on that at this point. If the motion were to be made, it would be to approve the concept, I think, of the land exchange, and then we have to formalize the paperwork on that later. And I would recommend it, certainly, but maybe with the stipulation that we at least attempt to negotiate a lower roof design.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I will say this, he has agreed concept to sell a lot down through here off from ours so that we can continue building project. We just don't know at this point what those will cost. But the potential is there for us to be able to expand our construction program in that same vicinity. So.
Who seconded that motion?
I did.
Any other
questions? We have a No Left Child Left Behind consolidated plan.
Yes, this is our annual.
not.
The narrative hasn't changed. The narrative has not changed. There have been some things added to the plan that were not there last before. One of them is a gifted and talented plan that we wrote this last summer. And it's now in the consolidated plan. We did go through and on the last section for student achievement trends, we have entered the 2007 CRT data where our areas of strengths and weaknesses are so that we identify those areas of focus. So the narrative that you see there has been changed. Let's see. I think that's probably all that we've changed in the narrative in the plan. We still don't have the... We're just getting the... it isn't the final budget. It's about the second draft of the budget, and we get four drafts before it's finalized in about February. But basically, our targets will be pretty much the same. This is the plan. The narrative hasn't changed other than we have included the CRT data and the gifted and talented plan. So we do need to have the plan approved. It has to be submitted by the 15th of this month. So I'm asking the board to approve the plan, the consolidated plan. Next year, we have to do an entire rewrite. I don't know that it will change even then a lot. Well, they don't realize how many hours went into this initially. But
a lot of
will move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Personnel actions name for approval?
Now we actually have two names for approval. Melanie Miera is head custodian at Cleveland Elementary School. Melanie has been the part-time custodian there. Interviews were held. I think they interviewed seven or eight, right? Eight candidates for that. And the recommendation of that committee is to have Melanie, head custodian at Cleveland Elementary, and also Suzanne Larson, as she's worked for us before with special needs, but a three-hour educational assistant at Fairn Elementary with the special needs students there. So I'm recommending the board approve those.
Okay.
I would move that we do that.
Question?
In the administrative council notes, there was a reference to Belinda Rausch, the records manager.
Well, she's been it's a contract.
It's an outside contract.
It's a contracted service for special ed auditing records that we've had.
Couldn't stay away, huh?
No. So she's not employed at the school district. It's a contracted service.
That's in our minutes.
Oh. Yeah. Sorry, Sam, I didn't mean to interrupt the motion.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll make the motion then.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have a request for travel for the auto competition.
Now, this is about every 2 years we have our auto students compete through CEU. They go to New Mexico, you recall. This is under sponsorship of the college, totally funded by the college, but it does involve our students, so it does need your approval for them to travel November coming up, 15th and 16th, to Farmington, New Mexico for the auto competition.
How many students?
We have six students. Two juniors, four seniors. They do very well.
They do.
Yeah.
This is good program.
I move that we approve the travel.
Second.
All in favor?
Great.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Memorandum of Understanding USDA and Educational Services and Products.
Good. Utah School Boards Association support offers programs for the district, and this is a memorandum of understanding to participate in a new program that they're offering. And what it is if they would have a service that would process Medicaid-eligible service claims for the district, which would potentially bring revenue to the district. John and Kirk and I met with Chad Harris from USDA, who kind of developed these programs. And it's kind of a thing. Right now we do Medicaid administrative claiming, and we do get some money from that, but we don't process any claims for services that we would provide to Medicaid-eligible students. And so this would do that. We honestly don't know how much revenue it could bring to the district, but the nice thing about this program and agreement is that there's no cost to the district other than training our employees to get the information that they would need to, and getting the program up and running. But USDA, supposedly, we hope, would do all the work as far as processing the claims and working with us on audits or any problems that would come up. The fee in this memorandum of understanding would be 10% of any revenue that we bring in. So again, there's no upfront cost. And the other thing that we like about this is that there is a 30-day written notice get out of it clause. If it doesn't end up working for us, we can do that. But the memorandum of understanding would bring a half-year contract again with that clause. So really, it's kind of a 30-day contract, but it would allow us to try it out, see if it works for us. Potentially, it's a really good thing. If it doesn't work, then we can get out of it. So.
Win-win situation.
That's the kind of thing I feel really good about.
I do too. That's right. Go ahead.
I think the board, the motion needs to be to approve participation, but also to authorize Jared to sign the memorandum of understanding for the school district.
Okay. That's what I said. That's what I heard.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Yeah. Approval of job description. For this one.
Now this involves discussion of some personnel, so I think maybe you want to hold off on that for.
We can do that.
An executive session discussion.
Let's go to the reports then. Principal Callahan will.
What was that?
I thought we'd have
getting
to it.
Thought
we'd
have what?
Sure.
You know, we have to break him in slowly.
We'll give you a break. In fact, that leads me kind of to my first point. I would like to publicly and to the board thank him for the job he's doing and let you know what a great job he is doing here.
Good.
Jim has a real natural feel for administration, I think, with kids and with teachers and so he's doing a good job. So I thank you, Jim. And also, before I get started too, I'd also like to thank you to Leroy for the amount of time and the help that he gives us, and also to Jared, I think, who's just been a treat to work with. So thank you guys for your help. We're always calling them for bizarre and crazy things, and they're always there to help, and we appreciate that. There are a lot of specific things that I could, you know, spend a half hour here going over the things that we're doing here at the school with programs and that, and I really, as I thought about this, I thought I'd just go into some of the things that we're proud of and some of the things we continue to work on and make it short and sweet and just kind of give you an understanding and of what we're doing. I listed four things that I think we're most proud of here at Emory High School, and I think Jim can, you know, attest to this too. Number one, we have very few discipline problems really here at the high school. As I talked to other principals around our region and just even the area of the state, anywhere near our size or slightly larger, we won't treat any of our issues for any of theirs. So we feel really good about that, and I do attribute that to the clear expectations and the hard work on the part of our teachers and the consistent consequences that they have for their actions. So I think our behavior is such that we can be proud of them as a district. I mean, they're typical high school kids, but I think that sometimes we don't tell people enough publicly and whatever that we're proud of them. We have some really, really good kids. Number two, we're pretty proud that we did make AYP this last year. We don't know how long that will last. We're not sure we're going to be perfect by this deadline, but we also attribute this to hard work on the part of our teachers, and we're using our data more than we ever have before to guide our focus on that. We know where our weaknesses are more than we ever have before, and we're trying to address them. Number three, we're pretty proud of an excellent faculty that, for the most part, I think really sincerely cares about kids. They work hard. I see them before school, after school. I see them fret and be frustrated and all of those things over kids. And we don't tell people enough about that and communicate that enough. So I thought that was an important thing to put in there.
And number four, I think that we have kids that for the most part are going to mature and grow while they're here. They change from 10th grade to 12th grade tremendously, and they're going to be wonderful human beings when they live. And I think that is attributed to the work on the part of our faculty and staff and all of those who put forth a lot of work. So these are pretty general, but we don't talk about them enough, and I thought that was important and something that we should bring up at this point. Now, we're not perfect, and we know that, and we're a long way from that, but we do know the areas that we need improvement. As I thought about these for the last couple of weeks, we need to individualize our instruction more in every student, whatever way we can do to help them be successful in high school. And we have some kids that are not successful, and we need to find out why and see if we can address that more personally. Two, we need to clearly identify which areas of the curriculum we know we have some of those, and address them to improve our state test scores. And I think in our math scores, as you look through the No Child Left Behind, we're all aware that math is a weak area in our curriculum, and we're working on that. Number three, we have a weakness in the writing skills of our students. A lot of them have a hard time even in high school now, which shouldn't be. Can you put down a decent sentence on a paper without some direct instruction for quite some time? We're working on that, and we're going to address that. And that also came out of our community council. And we're working hard to do that. And we have some good suggestions from our faculty that we're working on. We're going to divide our 15-minute reading time with some writing time and some writing instruction across the curriculum for 2 days a week. And we think it's worked in our reading. Our reading scores have gone up since we've done this. We're going to attack this in the same way with our writing. And then number four, I think that all of us need to be more aware of our students who are not performing, or they're struggling because of personal issues in their life, and it prevents them from being successful. And we hope that awareness will lead to the solutions to help them. We have some kids that just have personal issues enough that they can't focus in school. And in high school, they hide it a lot better than they do in junior high or elementary school. And I think we need to dig a little deeper to find out what those are and figure out ways to more personally serve them. So I know this is pretty general, but I don't think we do this often enough. And we also want to thank you for the help that you give to us and the support and all of the things that we know that all of you are doing that we couldn't do without you. So, questions? Well, I hear of problems in other districts, and you hear it on the news, and you hear about discipline problems, and you hear about truancy, and it seems so workable. If they could, you know, if you could pattern some of the things that you do at Emory High, it's remarkable.
Fights after football games,
yeah.
American Forest,
yeah.
Killing presents on the football field. So
well, yeah, that's true. But
it's all football. There's the ball.
Maybe that's a good time to also thank him, for the great football season that we had.
That's
true.
Right.
It was fun, and our kids really did a good job.
They're handing out checks at your football game rather than
and we had a tremendous experience in football with all of the schools that came forward.
It's amazing, isn't
the
it?
Money that they donated.
That kind of has a unifying effect.
Absolutely.
Nice,
I don't think there's anything more touching than having five football players who come up and hand you this money and are just crying and so intensely touched by all of it and not be touched by it. It's been quite a season, hasn't it, Jim? It really has. He's played football games with media all around him.
Yeah.
It's been difficult, I think, to focus at the first four football games. The cameras were out on him.
Right.
So it's been difficult to do that. We're attacking right now spell problems, low pants, and making on the hall. So
good.
Anything that
we're
talking about,
the
call.
That's good.
And it's all
true. That's good. That's good.
I'll put you on the spot. Not only are we concerned about it, but everyone in the county is concerned about it. Let me ask you a question, and don't give me the answer real quick. How safe is your school from these kids that may come in and do things that they shouldn't be doing? Are we really identifying those kind of problems and taking care of them before they do those horrible things? You may not have heard the latest news this afternoon. Finland had a student walk in, put the kids in the classroom, started to shoot. Killed seven, including the principal.
Wait, I think we're running out of time. This one, I can't start by saying, I know right now that we have identified one that we were concerned about, and we have him homebound right now. We are sending him to work with him, and both Jim and I and his teachers felt like we were another safe student here. Now, we've identified a few more. I don't know how to ever know for sure, but I do think that we're getting better on in actually seeing those characteristics that are out there and publicized enough where we're concerned. So we do have one out right now for that reason.
I think we've also held several lockdown drills, not only here but in other schools, so the students know how to react in case of an incident of that nature.
Helpful to have the county involved.
It's just a frightening thing, but you know, a lockdown drill last year went really well, I thought. It brought up a lot of questions
you wouldn't have thought
that
about.
We wouldn't even have thought about before. So I think we're working on a lot of those, but I don't know. I think that we're being more proactive than we ever have been with kids we're concerned about. We're serving them in a way that makes it safer for all of us. So actually, we have two students out right now that we're concerned about.
I think there are two real keys to, in my mind, that you have to look for, and I think going all the way back to Columbine, the thing they identified, the common thread in all of them, not just Columbine, but from then on, were kids who had no significant positive relationship with an adult. And that's something we have to work on in schools, whether it's a teacher identifying an adult in the school that can monitor and even have them assigned to kids. The other part of that was you ever had your mind just go blank all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
quite out.
You know, I think that's kind of what we mean in this number four, is that I think we do need to be, for those reasons and many others, more aware of the personal issues going on with kids.
Oh.
And you know what? If you open up at all to let them tell you, they will let you know. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other point I was trying to make.
They will come forward with that.
Right.
So where they've had success in stopping these things is where there was an environment where the students felt comfortable in telling the principal or a teacher or an adult in the school of things that they've overheard, things that they're aware of, so that it can be stopped. Because the kids, for the most part, have heard something. And if they feel comfortable in talking about it, then that's where one of the real keys exists.
I know what the most surprising one was. You and I were just sitting there talking about some issue one day, and the girl came like, do you want to find
marijuana
right now? This would be the easiest one you've ever done. Right there, but it was interesting. Our kids are telling. I think
they want a safe place. Well, thank you for all that you do and your faculty and you do produce some marvelous students that are prepared to meet the challenges of college and the world, and we appreciate that. Thanks for your, it is a one-on-one. We see that where teachers and faculty connect with the students, so thank you very much for that report. Okay, let's have the superintendent's report.
And most of what I have were the action items. Make my report a little short when we have to list them all on the agenda. So if you can find what I gave you tonight at the bottom, some general information, some of those things are just for your information. I would point out that Green River High School is having their musical this week, Fiddler on the Roof.
Yep.
November 8th through the 10th. Emory High, aren't you? Thank you, daughter. Next week. Yeah. So invite board members to participate and not go up on stage. But
I'm not going in.
the last information item on there, though, capital outlay equalization is something that we're extremely concerned about. And now with the referendum won and the results of the election, I get even more and more concerned. But and with the vote to split Jordan School District. Mm-hmm. and the implications that'll have on capital outlay and property tax. But right now, there are legislative committees that are listening to proposals. The school business officials, several of them have gotten together and made some proposals that make a little bit of sense, that would not necessarily, we wouldn't necessarily lose a lot, but we wouldn't gain a lot either because of our situation in Emory County. The thing that I'm really concerned about is Representative Hilton has a proposal out there that could potentially cost Emory School District almost $1.5 million in capital outlay funds, which would obviously translate into a huge tax increase in our county. our capital tax is one of the probably lowest rate in the state right now.
Right there.
But it could result in a huge tax increase. So we need to watch that, and we're going to be right on it with our legislators. I've talked with Brad King and Mike Dimitrich about it. Neither one of them are in favor of. I mean, they've looked at Mike Dimitrich, who's on the committee, the committee that's looking at this. When he saw what it does to his school district, he about fell off his chair. And I don't think you'll see any support from them. But this is a huge issue statewide right now with school districts, especially with these big school districts now being split. And so I just want you to be aware that is a concern, and we all need to watch that and let our legislators know how we feel about it. So I just bring that to your attention.
So who do we contact?
Well, right now there's nothing been brought forward. I think as the legislature gets into session and we see something coming forward, then I think we need to contact at least our legislators, if not other legislators even outside of our area. But the problem is when they look at what our tax rates are here, sometimes they don't have a lot of sympathy. They want you to be at the maximum tax rate, then they'll worry about you. then they'll be sympathetic. There's about 6 or 8 school districts in the state that have kept their tax rates extremely low. Because you have a high assessed value, low student population, and we're able to do that. But there's not much sympathy for us right now. And anything they do with it could potentially be damaging. If they go with some of the plans that the business officials have proposed, I don't think I see in any of those, and Jared may have to correct me, but I don't see in any of those that we would lose. We just wouldn't gain any additional revenues.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Representative Hilton's proposal.
Well,
this
is to have a new levy, tax levy, that would cost us $1.5 million a year. It would be higher than all but two of our tax levies right now. And so, and basically with his proposal, we'd get nothing in return.
Right. So just be aware of it.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Question. You passed over the 3-year calendar.
Well, I just indicated some information there. 3-year calendar, we're beginning work on that. You know, we're at the end of our passing calendar. We've taken some preliminary looks. And the next 3 years are strange. They don't fit into the same pattern that we've had.
I've had it suggested that we kind of massage this week of Halloween and have it come out a little different than it did this year.
This year was kind of strange because you had the fall break. I can't say UEA, Jim. The fall break, because of we kept it in line with the UEA convention, fell on a Monday, Tuesday, and then you had parent-teacher conference comp day off at the end, so you only had 2 days of school, which really, you know, we didn't like it either, but that's the way it fell. And it was because of fall break, and hopefully, I know next year the fall break will be probably that second Thursday and Friday in October, and hopefully it'll stabilize there. Now, some school districts in the state right now have established a fall break, and that's when they have it, and it doesn't matter what else is going on. Probably about half the school districts. We've made the decision to try to keep it in line with that group that meets in Salt Lake every year at that time.
Okay.
So,
no problem.
But it's going to be interesting how this one falls out. We may not get 3 days of spring break ever these next 3 years. We may only be 2 days. So we'll see how it works out.
Thank you.
Okay, Jared, what do you?
Just really quick, I included in your packet some information on the public meetings notice website, if you're interested. Just briefly, it was a law passed this last year that we will have to post all of our public meetings on a central website that the state will have for all public entities. And it's supposed to be finished, I think, by next March or April. And so at that point, we'll actually post our agendas and everything on that website. At this point in time, we won't have to put them in the paper anymore, but I understand that that could change depending on lobbying that's going on, so we'll see. But just for your information, that's all I have.
That's all you have? Okay. All right. Anything out there that we've missed or comments from any of you?
We only had one person come from Gordon District today that they had a sit for now.
Did they?
Well, I see Jordan, the public relations director, who my name's Colton. I know her quite well. I can't remember her first name. Melinda. On the news tonight, she's saying it's like a divorce. You know, you're trying to split up the property and the family. And
That
is being challenged, by the way, by at least two cities up there in federal court. They filed lawsuits saying it's unconstitutional because only one side got the vote, just like we did in Green River the one time. So I don't know that that's going to take place by. I don't know what the loss is, how long that phase in will be, but it may be a while.
Well, we're all happy about the defeat of referendum. So that's great. We have some items for a closed meeting.
I'll make a motion. We move into executive session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you all for coming and your support and all that you do. And
we also have refreshments just right outside. If you need some extra
No more real cookies
on. Don't want to go there.
There was a lot of them, but there's not so many anymore.
Not seven.
We need to thank the teachers for all the work.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
That's getting the word out. Where's our meeting again so I don't miss it?
It's on the 20th morning.
20th, okay. 7:30? Hi. What's going on? Well, we're just about to get to the closing minute, so I should be out of here about 8:30. Oh, sure. Yeah. Where am I going?
The problem.
Oh no, I'm fine. I went home and had a little snooze, so I'm good.
How you doing?
Good. How are you doing? Thank you. Appreciate you.
You bet. I know where the Almond Garden is. Right. Okay. I'll find it. You're in the cotton tree? Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, what room? Okay. Okay. All right, I'll call you when I get closer.
Yeah. I talked to him a few days ago.
We're good. I'm good. Okay. Okay. Bye.
I believe you are.
Oh. Yeah?
I'll take care of that. You hung up on him, huh?
He was like, Tom? Okay. Set the...
Hit it up the Salt Lake.
Yeah, hit it up
the
Salt Lake.
Probably.
All right.
You guys want to go get something to eat? Are you back? Sorry, did I hang up too soon?
Are you coming?
No, I'm going. I'm ready to go. Unless you want me to pick something up.
Will your wife be coming?
I don't know yet.
Okay, see ya. Bye.
We'll have to kind of see what comes on.
I'll
go to you again.
And then do you want one of the rooms outside?
Whatever the
other
is
doing. Tower room. Okay.
Whatever the other is doing.
All right. And are you
if
coming?
You go, yes,
I am.
If you want
go,
the tower room.
I do.
You'd rather be inside, too.
We want a little American grand.
With room service.
Is Scott going to come?
He will be there at least one night.
For the big collection.
And the rest
I want
of the time,
the one
not.
Where they kill on
and
the old
so, you know, Zion has invited us to lunch again on a Friday. Friday lunch.
Okay. I'll do that. Yeah?
Oh, yeah, they did last year, didn't they?
Okay, let's get this. I got to
move up. We've got to go to Salt Lake. So
okay, we have a few.
Sure, I'll make that motion.
Okay.
I'll make that motion, and we know Carly's in the figures that we've been presenting.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Including
that.
The district administration.
Yes.
Right.
And I'll move that we approve the job description for the
audio legal.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Did we get them all?
Yeah.
You did?
Okay. Okay, we need a motion to adjourn.
I
don't
need
a turn.
All in favor? Aye.
Yeah, it wasn't 5 hours like you said.
There we go.
Five.
That's actually one of our shorter ones. Who seconded the motion to adjourn?
Roy.
Okay. Five of all.
Well, tomorrow, you be careful.
You feel bad for me, but Roy has to do this every time after a meeting, so it's no big deal. I should be able to do that, right, Roy?
Oh, you get to Provo? I thought you were going to Salt Lake.
Provo.
Oh, well, that's not quite as bad.